Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So, this is how the world ends. Not with a bang, not with a whimper, but with a song from the band UB40. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. You know what day it is. December 21st, 2012. 12-21-12. It's the date on which the world is supposed to end, if you believe some widely debunked theories. But just in case those theories get rebunked, or whatever the opposite of debunked is, just in case those theories turn out to be true, here at Soundcheck, we thought we would spend our final hours on the planet, and yours, talking about why. Why is the apocalypse such a big part of pop culture, including music? Back in 2009, we invited two guests into the studio, radio host Gary Burton and the American Studies scholar Elaine Rapping at the University of Buffalo. Now, at the time, movie theaters, as you may recall, were showing a bunch of films with visions of a dark future, including 2012, as well as The Road and The Book of Eli. And given the popularity of apocalyptic imagery and visions in literature and poetry as well, I started out by asking Gary Burton if it's any different in music.
I don't think so. I think one of the main reasons it's such an interesting topic is you can play with it in so many ways, because there's no real set agenda. You can have fun with imagining how the end of the world might come around, just like they do in the movies and in literature as well. You can sort of think, is it going to be flood and famine? Is it going to be a thunderbolt from on high? Is it going to be ourselves destroying ourselves through global warming? So it covers such a wide range of issues.
Elaine, I don't know if you heard the same word in that sentence that I did, but Gary said you can have fun figuring out what the end.
Well,
why is this so endlessly appealing, this idea?
Well, actually, when you look at film, I think it's a little bit less fun. And I think that really obviously, over the years, there have been, you know, this kind of movie pops up all the time, The War of the Worlds, Road Warrior, that kind of thing. But I think right now we're in a period where there are three movies out right now, The Book of Eli, Road, and 2012, and I think there are going to be more. And what's really going on is that they appeal to a sense, I think, really, of a large fear that's going on in America, at least right now, that that the world is coming to an end. So, and you know, and I don't feel fine. There's like, I tend to look at popular culture, not necessarily music, but film and television, in terms of what's going on in the world and how it reflects it. And I think that right now we're living at a time when people are scared to death about any number of things. And these kind of movies, yeah, I guess maybe you could say fun, because what they really do is they're cathartic. They make you think that there's this hero, whether it's Tom Cruise or Viggo Mortensen, who ultimately does survive and save their kids. And so, yeah, I guess that would be fun. But it does appeal to a sense that people want to see this kind of thing. And, yeah, they want to see it end happily.
So the idea that we go to the arts, to film or to songs, to escape from this feeling of dread, that doesn't seem to be playing out in these movies, as you're suggesting, are saying something quite the opposite, which is, yeah, it's a real fear, but at the end of the day, Denzel Washington's here and everything
right,
will be
right.
Fine.
There's always a savior right at the end, and maybe that's part of the thing as well, that there's always some kind of savior figure that comes along and you know, the very last minute manages to save the world. I think it's true to say that, you know, we all have that innate fear about, obviously, our own mortality. And I would imagine since time began, we were always, you know, back in the day, we were, the humans would have woken up and thought, is the sun going to come back again tomorrow? And probably would have told folk stories, and then that would have turned into music as well. Throughout the ages, we've always been concerned about that. And the truth is, with the end of the world, with the apocalypse, we just, of course, we don't know how that might or might not happen. And so we can interpret it in many different ways.
Yeah,
well, you know, but still, you know, when you talk about escape, during the Great Depression, movies really were escapes to a world where Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers were dancing on the ceiling in gorgeous clothes. You don't see that now. I mean, people are not escaping to that kind of thing. They are escaping into movies that reflect, I think, much more a kind of a fear of, you know, what might actually happen. And
why would that be,
and,
Elaine?
What?
Why? Why would that happen? Why would we change our expectation of pop culture so much in a relatively, I mean, you're talking a bit in less than a century.
I'm talking really in a few decades.
What I'm
talking about is that if you watch television, for example, I think the media has a lot to do with this. The media really scares the hell out of people. There's 24/7 endless stories about one horrible thing after another. I just saw today that some kid killed his 10-year-old brother. That's an anomaly. It hardly ever happens, but it happens on television all the time. And I think that the proliferation of endless stories of horror and disaster and madness, I think, has really kind of had an impact on people's mentalities, that television does, you know, the news does seem to be telling us that the world is in worse shape than it used to be.
Elaine,
I mean, you know, in the days of radio, you didn't see these pictures, or even network news. You know, it wasn't so much. So I think that has something to do with it.
Although let's remember that War of the Worlds was originally a radio play and scared the crap out of half the people on the Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah. And then there was, of course,
that was Orson Welles. He was some kind of a genius.
There was the musical interpretation, of course, of Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds as well, the mid-70s double album.
Oh, really?
Which yes.
Kind of an all-star cast,
exactly,
Justin Hayward.
Justin Hayward and David Essex and Phil Lynott.
Elaine Rapping's book is called Mediations, Forays into the Culture and Gender Wars. Gary Burton's here with us in the studio, radio host and music reporter who's worked for BBC Six. And let's talk, Gary, for a moment about music. I mean, Elaine's talking about how our perception or our expectation of the media has changed. Do we expect something different from songs about the apocalypse, about the end of the world?
You know, I think one of the things is as well, for any artist, but particularly for musicians, it is another thing where it gives you the sense of control. We've been talking about everything being chaotic and out of control. If you're the actual artist and you're considering it and writing, you have somewhat some kind of control over the message that you're putting through. I think the two genres that have covered the apocalypse, the end of the world, in the greatest detail are probably the heavy metal wing and also classical music as well, and that probably comes about because of the sheer power of both of those camps. I think, you know, it's possible with orchestration to really make a huge, powerful sound, and thoughtfully, and also with heavy metal, of course, with just the sheer sound and the pounding of the riff, and then on top of that, you can add your death and doom dark lyrics, you know, Metallica's Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, that kind of thing, and many, many other bands in the metal arena certainly talk about the end of the world and about that kind of theme.
Well, we asked you, Gary, to put together a list of songs for us, songs of the apocalypse. And on that list, and actually at the top of Gary's list, is this song from The Clash.
London calling, see, we ain't got no hide, except for that one with the yellowy eyes. The ice age is coming, the sun's zooming in, engines stuck on it, the wheat is going thick, a nuclear era. But I have no fear, 'cause London is drowning, and I live by the river.
In the wake of 3 Mile Island, The Clash singing about a nuclear error in London Calling. Also on Gary's list, which, by the way, is on the soundcheck page of our website, this song by Kate Bush.
We've lost our chance. We're the first and last. Love it.
another song of the apocalypse called Apocalypse Please from the band Muse. Singing about religious fanaticism and the end of the world, and we're talking about how the end of the world is playing out in Hollywood and especially in song on Soundcheck today. Elaine Rapping, professor of American Studies and Media Studies at the University of Buffalo, is with us on the line. Gary Burton, the music reporter and radio host, with me here in our studio. And we want to know what you think. Why do you think we love music and movies about the end of the world? Do you have a favorite example of a song or some work of art that deals with the end of all things? You can leave a comment on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org, or you can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. And in fact, a couple of calls on the line already. Vic is joining us from New Jersey. Vic, you have a favorite song about the end of times?
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites comes from the film Until the End of the World by Wim Wenders. And it was the song he concluded the film with by U2, the same title, Until the End of the World. Just a great adventure, a great love story.
And this is a song that U2 had done for their album Achtung Baby, but I guess, you know, there's some cross-pollination between the film and the song. Bit of the end of the world, courtesy of U2. Gary, Elaine, when we talk about the end of the world, especially in music, I mean, you know, when you look at a movie like 2012, buildings are crashing, that's the end of the world, and that's what it is. Mm-hmm. There's very little metaphor involved. But, Gary, when we're listening to songs, apocalypse is often a metaphor for something else, isn't it?
Well, exactly, yes. I mean, one of the classic ones that sprung to mind when we were compiling the list was Skeeter Davis and a song called The End of the World. And, of course, that's just about somebody's breakup. It's a breakup song, essentially. But, you know, when you're in that position, it very much sometimes feels like it's the end of the world and there's no future.
You know, I was...
Why does the sun go on shining? Why does the sea rush to shore? Don't they know it's the end of the world? 'Cause you don't love me anymore. Why do the birds go on singing? Why do the stars
Now, there's a very different use of that phrase, the end of the world, in this song from Skeeter Davis, which is on Gary Burton's list, and again, his full list of apocalyptic songs on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Elaine Rapping, you were trying to get a word in edgewise there.
I just wanted to say something. I really loved your list, Gary.
Oh, thank you.
But there was one thing that... Well, I thought when you were taking calls, I wanted to say what my favorite end of the world songs are. I mean, Dylan has written a lot. I mean, he's been writing about the end of the world since the 60s, you know.
Absolutely.
From Hard Rain to High Water. And it is, unlike film, metaphoric and evocative rather than hey, it's the end of the world, and, you know, Bob Dylan's going to rescue you. So, I don't know, I just wanted to say that if there's anybody that has an apocalyptic imagination, it's Dylan.
I was going to say, in I think recent sort of rock and roll history, I think there were two particular eras which were very strong for these kind of songs, and one was towards the end of the 60s with the peace movement, and there were many concerns, obviously, about war and our self-destruction. And then again, I think probably around the kind of mid-80s during the Reagan-Thatcher sort of era, when there was the whole talk of you know, Star Wars and mutually assured destruction.
Right.
A lot of the bands started to get politicized then. There were bands like Peter Gabriel and
right.
U2 coming through then, and Simple Minds and the like, all with those concerns. So I think there were two very strong periods in time for that kind of writing.
Yeah, I agree.
Also, Elaine, don't we find that, I mean, at the... I know your specialty is popular culture, but, you know, pop culture around the year 1000 was very millennial and very apocalyptic. Didn't we see a kind of recurrence of that towards the end of the 90s as the new millennium dawned?
Towards the end of the 90s, in terms of film, yes. I was thinking, actually, when I was trying to compile my own list, that although there wasn't all at once the same thing, but there are a lot of films around the end of the 90s, and particularly War of the Worlds and Road Warrior. Well, that was the 80s. And there was a TV movie called The Day After, which really was about the end of the world,
mm-hmm.
and which everyone watched. It was like Roots. Everyone watched it. Also, there were films like The Terminator. It's a little earlier, but still you have that sense at a certain point that there were a lot of films like that where there was a sense of doom and apocalypse, and I think Gary is really right that at certain particular points in cultural history, the media, you know, film does reflect that kind of thing.
Well, of course, there are two very different takes on the end of the world in theaters right now. 2012 is just, it's just about a really, really bad day on Earth. It's doomsday, and this Adam Lambert song appears on the soundtrack.
So nothing can stop me from trying. Baby, you know that maybe it's time for miracles. 'Cause I ain't giving up on her. You know that maybe it's time for miracles. 'Cause
well, the song is called Time for Miracles, and I guess at the end of a movie about the apocalypse, that's an appropriate name for this Adam Lambert song. There's also the film adaptation of Cormac McCarthy's book The Road, depicting a father and son's survival after a cataclysmic disaster has taken place on Earth. Nick Cave and Warren Ellis composed a very different sort of music for this film. From The Road by Nick Cave and Warren Ellis. And in a moment, we'll take some more of your calls and comments as we continue our discussion of the end of the world in song. And coming up later, classical violinist Rachel Barton Pine. She's explored everything from folk to heavy metal. She'll join us with members of the chamber ensemble's Trio Settecento to play some live music here in our soundcheck studio.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
The best end-of-the-world songs are the ones that leave you to imagine what's happening. My favorite is Peter Gabriel's Here Comes the Flood. Waves of steel hurled metal at the sky, and as the nail sunk in the cloud, the rain was warm and soaked the crowd. I don't know what's going on there, but it sounds pretty terminal.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
WNYC support comes from Crafts at the Cathedral, presenting a craft show with the work of 60 professional artisans, December 4th through 6th at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. Info at craftsatthecathedral.org. Jazz at Lincoln Center, presenting Red Hot Holiday Stomp with Wycliffe Gordon, Victor Goines, Don Vappy, and Herlin Riley. December 10th through 12th in Rose Theater. Tickets at center charge 212-721-6500 or jalc.org.
When you give to WNYC by December 31st, you do three things at the same time. You support the programs on which you rely. You enrich your community by strengthening public radio for all listeners. And you get a tax deduction. And don't forget, your gift today will strengthen WNYC in 2010. Visit WNYC.org or call 1-888-376-WNYC to make your tax-deductible gift now. And thanks.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now about the end of it all. We've been talking about pop culture's obsession with the end of the world, as seen in current movies like 2012 and The Road. And we're hearing some of the ways that songwriters, composers, and rock bands like R.E.M. have envisioned the end of the world in music. Once again, joined by radio host Gary Burton and Elaine Rapping, author of the book Mediations, Forays into the Culture and Gender Wars. And also joined in our control room by Joel Meyer, our Soundcheck producer, who often checks out the comments that are coming in on the Soundcheck page. What you got, Joel?
John, our listeners are adding to Gary Burton's list of end-of-the-world songs. You can go to the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org to find out songs about the end of the world by artists as disparate as XTC, Talking Heads, Waylon Jennings, and David Bowie. Liz from New Paltz posts this comment probably for one of our guests. It's Lisa from Manhattan, excuse me. She writes, "Everyone secretly wants to see the apocalypse. It would be so visually exciting." And Sean from Brooklyn names the experimental band Godspeed You Black Emperor as the most tasteful end of times music.
You're chiming in there, Gary. You agree with this choice?
I think that could be a good one, actually, yes. I must say that if it's going to happen and we're going to see it, I'd like to see it from another planet, maybe, looking back.
But Godspeed You...
I think, though, you know, the other thing about film is that more and more Hollywood films are made for global audiences that don't necessarily speak English, and so they are more and more visually apocalyptic, and, you know...
Everybody understands a collapsing bridge and a crashing skyscraper.
Exactly,
and all that
so I think really the end-of-the-world movies may be hitting their stride. Everybody wants to see things blow up, and I agree with Lisa.
Well, I also agree with the Godspeed You Black Emperor, because listen to this. This is pretty apocalyptic sounding. Song's called Gathering Storm from the post-rock band called Godspeed You Black Emperor. Let's take some calls and see what some of our Soundcheck listeners have to contribute to our discussion of the end of all things. Alan joining us from right here in New York. Hey, Alan, you got a favorite song about the end of it all?
Yeah, it's a song called Enema by the band Tool. It's really about, like, California being, like, you know, destroyed and going into the ocean, and the song is about cleansing. And, you know, I want to know if your guests think about the end of the world. Are people fascinated just the whole cleansing part, or what's the fascination with the end of the world?
Well, that's an interesting thing, the idea, Elaine, that...
That's an interesting question. The cleansing means that, I think, well, particularly, I can't remember the ends of all of them, but certainly with Road Warrior, I mean, he goes through, well, the first Mad Max, all these horrible things happen, and then it is really about starting over. And again, that adds to the happy ending kind of thing where we're going to have this hero, always somebody very hot, too.
is that well, the term you know, used because... in academic circles these days, Elaine?
What?
That is that proper academic lingo that you're throwing around there?
Hey, I teach popular culture.
I think oftentimes it is the fact that there is some kind of hope and salvation at the end as well, particularly in movies and in literature. The interesting thing with music in particular is quite often that there isn't an answer given at the end. It's just left for you to think about what might happen next because the songs don't always resolve in a happy ending. It's just this is what it is and this is a fairly bleak opinion of the future.
Right, whereas a film tells you what it knows and what you should be seeing a song might be a little more of you involved.
I think it involves the listener much more. Yeah,
let's hear from Julie in Westchester. Julie, what do you think about all this art about the end of everything?
Well, my theory is that it's a way that people can somehow have control. You know, like we like to have control over things like our DNA, genes, and stuff. So with all the movies and the media attention, both from the people that are making it and the people that are watching it, somehow feeds that part in us that we can control it. We know what's happening. We're even orchestrating it as if what we're orchestrating now really has anything to do with what might really happen. I mean, it might be something totally that we're not even able to imagine, but it's a way for us to just somehow have an arm and a leg in the whole process and that we know. Also, we won't be surprised. It's like, we know. We can control it, and we know.
Julie, let me ask you, Julie. I mean, do you feel somewhat more comfortable with the idea of everything ending because you get to watch it on the big screen and see it on the nightly news and hear about it in songs and stuff?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that question because, for me personally, when I watch things such as, say, tsunami repeats or, you know, the end of the world type footage, what I do is I actually imagine how I'm going to be able to protect myself, you know, how I'm going to be able to run for cover. So that's just my own obsessive personality. Like, it gives me, I'm almost training, like I'm training for it. I don't know if other people respond like that too, but it's almost like now I think I'll know how I'll handle it, you know, if that's...
Well, let me ask our pop culture expert, Elaine. I mean, you know, you started our conversation off by talking about the various ways that people might find, you know, some personal resonance in these big films about disaster and stuff.
I think what Julie is actually saying is something I hadn't really thought about. But when she's talking about planning and so forth, it really does feed into the idea that I started with, that people are really have on their mind, what if? What if this really happens? And so it's very interesting that she would say that. And yes, people do have reasons for turning to popular culture for ways to cope with, in any number of ways, whether it's a happy ending or her, I think, quite original idea of, you know, imagining what would I do if I were this person? So yeah, that's it. I think there are a lot of ways that people must use this stuff.
I would fly my car between those two falling buildings just the way that hot young actor guy just did. Yeah, that sounds good to me. All right, lots of comments coming in, and Joel Meyer again in the control room has been moderating them. Joel.
We have a nice comment from a woman or a man, I'm not sure, named Yorgo from Astoria, and she sort of has like a happy ending that we could end on here. Yorgo writes, in Greek, apocalypse means lifting of the shroud or veil to reveal what's underneath or hidden. The Book of Revelations was written in Greece on the island of Patmos. The apocalypse isn't going to be what everyone thinks it is. It's going to be something different, something wonderful.
Wow. That is a very good place to leave it. And so we will. Elaine Rapping is a professor of American Studies and Media Studies at the University of Buffalo. Gary Burton, no relation to the American vibraphonist of the same name, is a radio host and music reporter who's worked for BBC Music and other British outlets. We aired this segment 3 years ago, but we figured that if today, December 21st, 2012, is indeed, as predicted, the end of the world, then we'd be the last people you'd want to share it with. Wait, no, that didn't come out right. Well, you know what I mean. And if it is the end, thanks for listening, and it's been nice to know you. This is Soundcheck.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only